The Electric Circus. Insert coin. Thank you. Press start.
That's right, The Electric Circus, the totally geek-tastic podcast devoted to news, reviews, rants, and raves on your favorite stuff, games, gear, cons, cosplay, and more. And here's the ringmasters for today's circus, Ray Gun and Uber Nerd 527. So let's go down to the center ring. The show's about to begin.
Arcaders, Ray Gunn here with the ArcadeArchives.com, and welcome. You ready for this? The 30th episode of the Electric Circus podcast. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We've hit the big 3-0 around here. We're very excited. We're also excited about this month's episode. If you haven't noticed on the website, we've decorated for a birthday party. It is the 40th anniversary of a certain big gorilla. We all know who he is, and that is Donkey Kong. That's right. The big gorilla himself is the big 4-0. So we decided to devote all of this month to Donkey Kong, the history, the games, both arcade games as well as the home iterations therein. We'll also be doing things like the games that Kong forgot, because there's a lot of games out there that were based on the Donkey Kong formula. Either a direct ripoff, pirated, or a game kind of out of the realm, yet it's still a platformer. And we'll be doing those very soon. But I thought we'd start with the podcast and going over the history of Donkey Kong. Now, we're not all in the same room. As I had mentioned in my previous podcast, Josh is getting married. Danny is going to school. So it makes it rather difficult to come up with a time to record. So I said to everybody, guys, we'll record our separate parts of the podcast and then we'll put them together. And I gave them the criteria. Number one, the first time you saw the game Donkey Kong, what did you think of it? You saw the cabinet, the bright colors, the game itself. You played it. What did you think? Number two, did you play the sequels and what did you think of them? Number three, what is your favorite home version, whether it be home version of the arcade or the Donkey Kong Country series, whatever it may be, what is your favorite home iteration of Donkey Kong? And I think that'll make for a very, very good podcast. I think we will probably have very different answers, especially mine from theirs, because I saw Donkey Kong well before they did. So I know that our answers are going to be very different. So I figured I'd start with mine, and let's go over my history with Donkey Kong. It started in late 1981. It was probably fall 1981. I had just started high school. Down the street from my house was my junior high school. I went to Van Wyck Junior High School in Hopewell Junction, New York. And right next door, and I know I've brought this up, especially in Coin Up a few times, there was this little deli next to our junior high school, and we would always sneak over and get candy and soda and whatever. You know, one of us would actually sell the candy to the other kids in school that didn't want to walk across the quad to go over there and get their candy. Long story short, I played a lot of games there. One I've brought up a few times, either in Coin Up or just in discussion, was Astro Fighter, one of my favorite space shooters of all time I saw there. But this actually takes place next to the deli. Sometime in 1981, early 81, they started building a little strip mall right next door to the deli. And the deli, literally, you'd go across the quad from the junior high school right into the deli's parking lot. Well, now you could shoot right behind the deli and go to this little strip mall. And in the strip mall was a pizza parlor. Now, it has been 40 years. I do not remember the name of the pizza parlor at all. I can tell you that its name now is, hang on one second, Pizza Time Restaurant. I do not think it was Pizza Time Restaurant when I was a kid, but I could be wrong. It had just opened up that summer. Now, most of that summer, I was gone. I had traveled down to where I live now, Florida. I went for the very first time to Walt Disney World. We had just gotten home. I was just starting school. And I remember it was a Saturday, and I think it was early fall. And I rode my bike down to this pizza parlor. It was the first time I got a chance to go down and check the place out. And I remember pulling my bike up and parking it and looking inside to see, of course, you know, is there any video games? And here's this blue cabinet. And I looked at it, and I was floored by the artwork on the side of the cabinet, the iconic Donkey Kong artwork. And like I've said before, the cabinet should paint the picture. You know what I mean? You're not seeing the screen at first, especially if it's on its side. The cabinet should tell you almost everything you need to know about the machine and really pull you in. And that artwork delivered on that on every front. You know, you've got Donkey Kong holding Pauline. Here's Mario, a.k.a. Jumpman. You know, barrels, fireball. You got the platform. It sucks you in. You immediately look at that cabinet and know you have to check this out. And I go up to it and I see this just massive structure of girders and ladders, a little oil can, hammers, barrels coming down, giant gorilla at the top, girl on the platform next to him. And I'm instantly pulled in. This game was probably the first to do that. Maybe not quite the first, because I saw another game that we will bring up in the games that Kong forgot, that I think really Donkey Kong took a lot of the light away from this game. And this game came out about a year before, but I saw it that summer as we were traveling to Florida. We stopped at a little place called South of the Border. And if you haven't been there before, as a kid, it's awesome. And they had this massive arcade, and one of the games in there was called Crazy Climber. And I remember Electronic Games Magazine touting this game just before Donkey Kong hit, and they were just saying how good the game really was. And I remember getting the sense of all these realistic, for the time, you know, parts of the building falling and the sign, you know, being electrified, this and everything. It was almost something you could reach out and grab, you know, and I always thought that that was a degree of realism we hadn't seen before in an arcade game of any kind, or really a video game of any kind. And I think Donkey Kong kind of took that to the next level, because you see that oil can, it's almost like you could reach out and grab it. And that was... today we take that stuff for granted. We take all of that for granted. But when you're talking 1981 and most of your games are space shooters, things are very abstract, you know, Pac-Man, things like that, where it's not based in realism, yet here's this game that kind of says, well, here's some realistic stuff. And you're floored, because it looks like you could reach out and touch it. And it's really, really... visceral in that fact when you first take it in, and it's that part of the decade, and you haven't seen stuff like that before. So of course it just pulled me in, and of course I played, and I think everybody did this in the beginning. The first time you played it, what's the first thing you wanted to do was jump on in the oil can, and what happens? You die, and there's my first life gone. And then, of course, I said, okay, let's figure this out. You know, you climb the ladder, you rescue what you think. You rescue Pauline, but you don't. And Kong takes her to the next part, and you move on. And the game just pulled me in. It was unlike anything I'd ever played before, because now you had... It wasn't just a simple, you know, like thing you had to do in order to keep going, like shoot the enemy, eat a dot. There was, you had to traverse these girders, avoid the barrels either by jumping over them or avoiding them on the ladders, getting to the top, rescuing the girl, and then of course it would change on every single level for four levels. You when you first play it, it just is daunting. You are floored by what they're throwing at you. And like I said, by today's standards, you know, we've got stuff that just dusts that away, but at the moment, in 1981, there was nothing like this at all. You had no idea what this game was, but you just had to keep playing it. You had to keep trying to get to the top. How high could you get? That was, you know, the tagline as you started the game. You needed to keep going. And I remember I must have put $10 in that machine that day. Literally $10. The guy kept getting mad at me because I kept going up and asking for quarters. And I don't even think I had any pizza at that point. I was literally just playing Donkey Kong the whole time. And, you know, of course, he's getting a split on that, so it's not really profit. So, you know, of course, I ate the pizza. It was delicious. But I kept going back to play Donkey Kong. It was down the street from my house. I literally could hop on my bike, get down there, and play to my heart's content. And I would go every weekend and play Donkey Kong. And, of course, I started working at Dream Machine. And what did they have there? They had a Donkey Kong machine. And I would play the heck out of that one, too. I adored that game. It was that same fixation I got when I played Pac-Man. It all of a sudden just took over. It was everything I wanted to. I just wanted to play Donkey Kong at that point. It was, I had to keep playing. I had to keep trying. You know, we kind of look at it today, and you know, you had King of Kong and all this other stuff, and you have people that get the, you know, the high scores and things like that. You know, yeah, you played it for the high score, but it was more, what's next? You want to keep seeing how hard it gets. And you didn't worry about the score, for the most part. I didn't. I just kept playing it and had fun. But that's really the first time I saw Donkey Kong was that this September, and it was a Saturday, and I go to the pizza parlor, and there it is. And that was it. It was all of a sudden I had these two arcade games that I adored. I had Pac-Man, I had Donkey Kong. These two I would play all the time. And then in 1982, I again went to a pizza parlor. And this one was at the Duchess Mall. And they had a Donkey Kong Jr. machine. And I think I might have saw the ad for it in the May 1982 edition of Electronic Games Magazine. That was the first time I saw Donkey Kong Jr. But then to see it up close and personal, and you know, it's this bright orange cabinet now, and it just took me by surprise. You see, the artwork's very different, and all of a sudden, Mario is the bad guy. And I think this is right where Mario got his name, because everybody knows the story about how the landlord that had their warehouse, I think either in New York or Washington, one or the other, his name was Mario, and in order to honor him, they named Jumpman Mario. And it was Donkey Kong Jr. where the name Mario started. And all of a sudden, Mario is the bad guy. And Mario has captured Donkey Kong. And what's really cool is this is the really first true legitimate sequel of a storyline that we're seeing in arcade games, or video games as a whole at this point, was Donkey Kong Jr. And, you know, so you had obviously the ending, you know, we won, we got Donkey Kong, we saved Pauline. Well, now he's locked up in a cage and Mario's at the top and you're not playing Mario anymore. Mario's the bad guy and he's sending Snapjaws down to you and his birds and everything else, and you're at the bottom as Donkey Kong Jr. You're this little baby gorilla and you have to go up and rescue your dad. And again, the level design is outstanding. Again, weird for a sequel to almost exceed everything that the first gave us in this game, because it had a very it went from a very jungle-like levels in the first and second. You go to Mario's hideout, all of a sudden it's very high-tech, and there's girders that are electrified and this, that, and the other thing. And then you have this massive structure that Donkey Kong is actually caged in, and you have to get the keys up and unlock that cage. And there's, four or five keys. You go up there, knock them off, bang, end of the game. That game was amazing in every sense of a sequel. Now, whether or not the numbers were there, these were talking 1982, things were starting to heat up for the game crash of, well, I always felt the game crash happened in 84. That's when everything really fell apart, but 83, you know, it was a different time, but this game was a true sequel in every sense of the word. It was a phenomenon, in my opinion, because it took everything the original did it better, added different twists to it. You didn't have hammers this time. You had fruit you had to drop down, and you'd hit the bad guy. You had to time it in order to make that happen. So there was a level of difficulty that wasn't in the first game, in my opinion. And the level design was through the roof. It took everything the first one did and flipped it on its head and gave you different levels that were so unique from one another, because they weren't based on a building. They were, you were in the jungle, then all of a sudden you're in this hideout, Mario's hideout, because there is a intermission where he's on in his helicopter and you're kind of floating next to him on a rope. That was really cool. So the game, to me, exceeded everything that Donkey Kong had done at that point. So I was in love with that. Now, for the third game, and there's a lot of, you know, mixed feelings about Donkey Kong 3. Now, I personally, and I've stated this before, I love the third game. Because it literally, again, takes everything and flips it on its head. It is no longer a platformer per se. It has some platforming elements in the fact that you have to navigate these little platforms, and some of them are, you know, stacked differently and you got to jump over, but now it's a shooter, and it's a really good shooter. And I think that's the problem that people have with it, is that it is in essence a shooter. I love this game. Its difficulty is up there when you start playing and you get to some of the higher levels where, you know, the B-Spies, there's more of them. There's different types. You have the mosquitoes that dive bomb. The caterpillars come down more frequently. And Stanley Bugman, you know, is to me, a very underutilized character in the Nintendo universe. I'm very saddened by that, because I think he has a lot of potential. And it was just a really well done game, in my opinion. Just because it was a shooter, people tend to shun that. In fact, I want to say Nintendo, but really it was Namco, I would think, when they did the Donkey Kong 20th anniversary cabinet back in, it wasn't really 2001. It was actually, it was the 30th anniversary, I think. And we have several of those on property, and you'll notice when you play it, there is no Donkey Kong 3 in it. What they've done is they've truncated Mario Brothers and made it fit on a vertical screen. And it saddens me, because it's not the sequel to Donkey Kong. It is its own iteration. It's no longer Donkey Kong. It's about Mario. So why they omitted it? Well, I think because, you know, this game was developed shortly before the crash. I think they were trying to go in a different direction because they had done platformers at that point. And I think they decided that, you know, they could take the character of Donkey Kong and move him in a different direction. And by then you had Mario Brothers. So you had, you know, Mario was in a different game. So they had to come up with a new character. I know that there was a Game & Watch version with Stanley in it. And so they took that game and they made an arcade game out of it. And I honestly think the game holds up very well for what it is. and people just, again, they shun poor Donkey Kong 3. And it's if you take the time to actually play it, you will enjoy the game, I promise you. But most people don't do that. They will continuously push that game away. And it's fun. There's so much in the levels, in how these bees come down at you, and how Donkey Kong, when he gets close to the bottom, literally you'll hear the timer start to make a noise that he's getting close to the bottom. And so you're not only shooting the bees and other bugs, you're trying to keep him from reaching the bottom. You've got to get him to the top so that he clears the level. So there's a lot going on in the game, and I think, you know, you get people that think it's maybe too hard, and then you have people that say it's really not a Donkey Kong game. And I've gone over that in great detail in a lot of posts, and how much I like the character of Stanley Bugman, and how he does get a lot of shade, and I don't think that's fair. But where I saw Donkey Kong 3 was very interesting. It was January 1984, and at that point, I was working in a movie theater that had just opened up in South Hills Mall in Poughkeepsie. And this particular day, I wasn't in until later in the day. It was a Saturday. And one of my favorite arcades that was outside the mall was a place called Mr. T's Arcades. And he had two locations I recall. I think there might have been a third one. There was one in Wappingers Falls, and then there was one farther up in Poughkeepsie. And I'd never been to that particular arcade, and I heard that one had some really cool games in it. So I go up, I check the place out, and yeah, it's got some really, really great games in it. And I play for a while, and then somebody had mentioned that there was an arcade directly across the street in a strip mall. And so I said, well, I'm going to go check that out. So I go across the street to the strip mall. And here is this. The strip mall was strictly for businesses. It really didn't have any retail, anything in it. And then at the end of the strip mall, because it was all internal, you could walk through it, there was this little, lonely arcade. And I don't think I ever saw an arcade like this up until that point, where there was no attendant. There was nobody. The walls were covered in a brown shag carpet. It was floor to ceiling, all this brown shag all the way around, and they had maybe a dozen or so games in it. And now, there wasn't any mention that I know of Donkey Kong 3, unless it was in the trades like Replay and Play Meter and things like that. So I didn't know about it. So I walk in and I see this again. All the artwork is different. You can see it on the site. The headers are pretty much the same as I've left them almost exactly the way they were, but the art style would change from each game. And you see this image of a different looking Donkey Kong, more different than all the other ones, and this little guy with a spray bottle, and you're like, what is this all about? The first thing I thought was, another Donkey Kong, really? So I look at it, and the first thing I saw was this. It was Galaga. It looked like Galaga. In essence, you know, you have the formations that come down. You have, instead of two ships connecting together, you do have a super sprayer that you can knock off and get, and it would give you a boost for a few seconds. But ultimately, it was very similar in design. You had different bug types. You had, you know, the caterpillars, they would come off around the sides, and you had to spray them to go back up and avoid them, or else they would crawl around and get in your way. You couldn't touch them, of course. It was a vastly different game, but it had me hooked, because again, something very different out of the realm of Donkey Kong, and the fact that it wasn't a traditional platformer, and it was something so out of left field. And Nintendo's always been really good at doing these games out of left field. And a lot of them we didn't get to see in the United States, because a lot of them weren't released here when the NES came out. But they've always done some really, really screwy games that just are out of left field. And I think Donkey Kong 3 fits into that mold, that it doesn't feel like the rest. And that's why it's so, you know, unique. But its gameplay will pull you in if you try it. And it is fun. It gets very hard. especially in the higher levels where these bugs, you know, like some of the beast spies, once they take, you know, because basically at the bottom you have all your vegetables that grow, and when the bugs take, they take it away, and that's one way you can end the game, is if they get all your vegetables at the bottom of the screen. They take it to the top, and that bug turns into, I think, a mosquito, and it dive bombs straight for you. So you have to be very careful with those, but there's so many different bug types in the game. And it, the challenge is, you know, it's up there as far as shooters go, stationary shooters. It to me, is a very good shooter. But because it has the Donkey Kong brand on it, people expected this, but they got that. And I think that's where really what ultimately hurt the game. But shame on Nintendo and Namco for not including it in the Donkey Kong Classics arcade game, because it deserved it. It deserved to be there. And it didn't get that love, and it really deserved it. But that's the three games. And, you know, so you kind of grew up around Donkey Kong, and then you wanted to play it at home. And, you know, in the early days of playing it at home, it was very, very different. You had a little thing called the ColecoVision that had come out in 82. And it was like the Christmas gift of 1982. Everybody wanted ColecoVision because the graphically it looked more like the arcade than any other system at that time could reproduce. So everybody wanted it. And it had a really good version of Donkey Kong on it. But if you did not have that, Coleco offered watered-down, scaled-down versions of their games for other systems, particularly the Atari 2600. And, you know, the Donkey Kong on Atari 2600 was vastly different. It had two levels on it, the girder and the rivet screen, and that's it. And it would start back to the beginning. There was no real animations to it. You ran up. The barrels almost looked... I always reminded me of Ritz crackers, the way they looked when they were rolling down. The most offensive thing was really Donkey Kong himself looked like a gingerbread man. But at that moment, that's all you had. So again, like Pac-Man, everybody complained about Pac-Man, but it's what you had, so you played it and you enjoyed it for what it was, and you know, it made you want to play the arcade more. Well, you know, by 1982 I had gotten a computer. Instead of getting the ColecoVision, I had gotten an Atari 800 computer, and that machine had a really good port of Pac-Man. I played it and played it and played it. It was awesome. Looked more like the arcade. It played more like the arcade than any other version I had played up to that point at home. And the nice thing was you could select what round you wanted to start in. Particularly what it would do is you'd select the fruit level. And then if it was dual fruit level, like if it was apples, you played from the first apple up. And you could go all the way up to keys. And it got hard. It got really hard. And I love that game. Well, gosh, it must have been summer of 82. The little computer store that I purchased my computer from was directly across the street in South Hills Mall. It's a little, like, mom and pop style computer store. And I bought my first computer there. It was an Atari 400. And then I got with a friend of mine, and I ended up trading him for his Atari 800, which gave me 64K out of the gate, which was awesome because the 400 only had 16, so you couldn't play a lot of the games that were, you know, past that, especially anything on a disc. You couldn't play it. It was just, you didn't have enough memory. So I got his 800 computer, and I remember going to the computer store to look for peripherals. I had one disc drive that came with it, so I was looking for a second disc drive and a modem, a few other things. And it was at that point that Atari changed their packaging for the Atari brand, and they went, instead of having the artwork on a multicolor, well, differently, each game had a different color, especially the Atari 2600. The Atari 800s were a little different. They had a black box, and then they'd do some artwork on it, And now all of a sudden everything was a uniform silver color, had a little rainbow at the top, and then it gave you an image of the game. And out of the corner of my eye, I thought it, one of the boxes said Donkey Kong. I'm like, there's no way. No way that they do a computer port of Donkey Kong. I turn my head, I look again, and sure enough, there is a 8-bit version of Donkey Kong. I was floored. I saved up my next paycheck. I went down, I think the game was like $40. And I went down and I picked that bad boy up and I went home. And it was without a doubt, and to this day, that version is one of my all-time favorite home versions of Donkey Kong. Because what most people know, if you've played Donkey Kong at home, is the fact that they omitted levels. For example, with the Atari 2600, you had the girder, which is level 1, and the rivet, which typically would be level 2 in the American version, but originally it was actually the end level, level 4. So you were missing the elevator stage, you were missing the conveyor belt stage. All of those were gone. And even the NES version omitted the Pie Factory stage altogether. It was gone. This was one of the only versions that had all four levels, including the Pie Factory. And it played as fast as the arcade. Graphically, it was right on par. Of course, it's going to be a little different, but it was by far and still is one of my all-time favorite versions of Donkey Kong. And if you haven't played it, I am going to leave a video in the description on the website so that you can actually see this game. And it is really good. And then I saw an article a couple years ago, and I'll have to dig that up, about the designer who didn't like the game at all. He played it and hated it. But he made, if he hated it that badly, but he made the best port that I think ever came out, especially for an early system of Donkey Kong you've ever played. Even the ColecoVision kind of was watered down because, again, it didn't have all the levels unless you got Super Donkey Kong. I think might have had it, but I've never played Super Donkey Kong. It's something I'll have to do some research on. But it was by far one of my all-time favorites. So I had the 2600. I had the 8-bit computer. Home versions after that, of course, I had the NES. And, you know, everybody kind of knows the story. The NES was basically built on a platform that could play a good version of Donkey Kong. That's what they wanted. They wanted almost an arcade-perfect version for everyone to be able to play at home. So, of course, the system provided that, even though it omitted the Pie Factory level. It was still a great version. A lot of fun. The menu system, it allowed for two players right out of the gate. It was a really good version, so I'm not discrediting the version, but I remember having that one. And then, of course, Donkey Kong went silent for quite a long time on the home market, and then the Game Boy version came out, and I remember playing that at Electronics Boutique, and that was like one of the first ones. In fact, I have it right here, and it's in my Super Game Boy. And it was a Super Game Boy enhanced version that actually had the what looks like the arcade cabinet bezel right there. So it looks like, you know, you're playing the arcade version on the Game Boy. And, of course, it has the first four levels, and then it just jumps into this whole other game. That game was a lot of fun. And it was kind of updated like 10 years later when they did Mario vs. Donkey Kong. Similar premise where you had to find the key, open the door, go to the next level. But, you know, of course he has added, he's almost an acrobat now. He can do these backflips and somersaults and all kinds of crazy stuff. And that game still holds up. It's a lot of fun. A lot of careful thought went into that game. And so that one's highly enjoyable. If you haven't played it, give it a shot. You're going to love it. Especially if you can play it on any emulator, of course. I'm fortunate because my good friend the Uber Nerd had a Super Game Boy. And I had bought a copy of Donkey Kong Game Boy way back. And now I have it sitting here. I have popped it in my NES. And it is flawless. The colors match perfectly. You have the bezel. It's a lot of fun. Pick that game up and play it if you haven't yet. I highly recommend that one. Now, the next step, of course, the next evolution is Donkey Kong Country. Now, that series is still going on today. I mean, they had Tropical Freeze, I think was the last one. You know, and you had Donkey Konga, which was a different thing, but it was in the same vein. It was the same characters. It was more of a DDR game. But they've had at least different versions of Donkey Kong Country for almost 30 years. And so the game has some staying power. My personal favorite out of the group is the original. I've always been a fan of the original game for the most part, if at all possible. Donkey Kong arcade games vary in that respect because I think the sequels tend to outdo the original. And that's what you try to do with sequels. But when it comes to the Country series, I just like the original. I guess it has that unique feel that all of them have now. So it was like the first time, like when you play the original Donkey Kong, it's that original first impression. And that game had all of that for me. And I loved, it took a little while to get used to having two player, like a second person, Diddy Kong next to you. That was a little different for me. But once I got used to that, it was a lot of fun. The graphics were ahead of their time, obviously, especially on a system that was aging. That generation aged very quickly because we went from the 16 to the 32. It seemed in just a couple of years, all of a sudden we were, out of that. Whereas in the 80s, your 8-bits, they hung right in there, right up until the late 80s into the early 90s. So that entire decade, you had 8-bit systems. And then all of a sudden, you had 16-bit for a few years, and then right to the 32-bit. And that's where Donkey Kong Country kind of curtailed that, at least for a short time. Kudos to Rare and Nintendo for doing that and showing that that system could still do a lot of miraculous things, especially with hardware enhancements and cartridges. They were really, really on the ball when it came to that stuff. So that was really cool. And the game, to me, again, it's another one that holds up. It plays really well. The sequels, 2 was okay. 3, I wasn't a big fan of. I've played Donkey Kong 64. Funny story. I always wanted to play Donkey Kong 64. Never had an N64, not until later on. I was never a fan of the controls. So for me, it wasn't a system I really enjoyed. And then, of course, they put it on the Nintendo shop for the Wii Virtual Console, or the Wii U. I think it might have been on the Wii also, but I know it was on the Wii U because that's when I picked it up. And honestly, the game, I don't know, it confused me, I guess, in a way. I wasn't exactly sure what to do in the very beginning, so it was one of those, well, I'm a little older, and yeah, maybe if I'd played this 10 years ago, it would have been fun, but now it's like, eh. It's still there, and I may try it again. But I've always been a fan of the Donkey Kong Country series. I have Tropical Freeze, and I enjoy that. I love how they've always stepped up with enhancements to the game. I love the shadowing effects as you're going into the sunset in some of the levels, and all you can see is your shadow. I always thought that was really cool. The level bosses are really where things get hard. And, a lot of people have mixed feelings on Nintendo games that they kind of coddle you in the beginning and then they throw everything at you later on. I'm sort of in that camp. I can see that because you play it and it's like really cool. You can get through the first like few rounds and everything's great, and then all of a sudden the thing goes crazy and you're like, oh my god, I can't finish this. Especially as you get, again, I'm not going to use age as an excuse, but as you get older, your reflexes and your hand-eye coordination are not what they used to be. So games like that, I'll play, and then I have to put them away for a while because they're just like, wow, this is way too much for me. But I still love the classics. I still love the original Donkey Kong Country is the one that holds up for me in the whole series. Again, because it was that newness the first time. It was a game that showed the strengths of a system that was starting to peter out. And I think it was just an amazing stroke of luck that Nintendo came out with this game right at the end and it held it together for a couple of years, you know. So kudos to them. And again, that's what I liked. So the 2600 version I grew up on, home one, then the 8-bit floored me, and still play it to this day. The NES version was fun, but it was one of those, well, the NES is new and there were so many other titles, but it was fun to have that. You know, it was one of the original Black Box titles, so obviously you had to have them all. So it was fun to go back and play. Then you had the Donkey Kong for Game Boy, which I still love, and Donkey Kong Country. So those are the ones I loved playing at home. All the arcade games I loved for different reasons. Again, I loved how they changed they changed the whole thing around in every iteration. Every sequel was different from the last one. Even Donkey Kong 3. And like I said, nobody gives that game love. I love it. So, and your mileage may vary. You may not like it at all, but I thought the game was really good. So, those are mine. So what I'm going to do is hand the microphone over to my comrades and see what their favorites are. And we're going to find out right now.
Hey, Arcaders, it's Joshua the Uber Nerd here, and I'm sorry that I haven't been there lately, but I assure you that after all the big events that are unfolding now in my life are done, I would definitely jump back onto the website. But I want to take a moment and give you guys some of my Donkey Kong memories for this podcast. So, here you go. My first ever memory of playing Donkey Kong. Now, to be honest, I'm not sure whether I played the arcade game or not first, but my first ever memory of playing Donkey Kong is actually playing it on my dad's Commodore 64. And the funny thing was, my dad put it on a black and white screen, so I didn't even know that Commodore 64 had color until I was a lot older. I just thought it was just a black and white computer, and that was just the technology for the time. But I actually played Donkey Kong on my dad's Commodore 64, and he taught me all the tips and tricks on how to play the game. And I really enjoyed playing Donkey Kong on there. And then, obviously playing it in the arcades, you know, especially when I started working at Disney Quest, I would every once in a while jump onto a game of Donkey Kong or Donkey Kong Jr. or I think we had Donkey Kong 3 in one of the cabinets, if I'm not mistaken. But I just remember just really loving the game. I really, really wish that I had played the Game Boy game Donkey Kong when that came out. I believe it's Donkey Kong 94. But still to this day, I haven't played it yet. But I hear it's an amazing game. But it wasn't until the Super Nintendo came out that Donkey Kong Country was like the biggest thing ever. I love the original Donkey Kong Country. I've actually tried to go back and play 2 and 3 because I've never played 2 and 3 before. Some people really love 2, and they think like 2 is the best one out of the 3, but I really enjoy the first Donkey Kong Country game. I feel it has the best game, the best platforming, the best soundtrack, the best boss battles, and of course the one and only level that I hated to death was the minecarts. Nobody likes the minecarts. When Donkey Kong 64 came out, it was really exciting because I loved Donkey Kong Country, but then I played Donkey Kong 64 and I was just it wasn't as fun as Banjo-Kazooie or anything like that, but it had its moments. It had some good times. And then, of course, when Donkey Kong was added into like Super Smash Brothers, things like that, I really enjoyed that. And then, lo and behold, one day I got my hand on a copy of Donkey Kong Country Returns. Now, I skipped Konga, I skipped all the other ones because I didn't want to like play a little drum thing, but I played Donkey Kong Country Returns on the Wii, and my gosh, that game was fascinating. beautiful game. I just loved it to death. And then its sequel, which was, I believe it's called Ice something? Tropical Freeze. Yeah, it was called Tropical Freeze. I actually didn't play it for the Wii U when it came out, but I did play it for the Switch. And the Switch version was just, it was great. I love the history of Donkey Kong. I'm actually learning about that. I remember one of my favorite documentaries was The King of Kong, which was a great documentary and just really fun to watch, just really funny, made me laugh. I love a lot of the Donkey Kong references that have been in different video games and movies, and I think my favorite one was the one in Futurama where Donkey Kong came out. Was asking for all everyone's quarters. I love that. And of course, you know, like in Pixels where Adam Sandler had to fight Donkey Kong at the end. I thought that was kind of nice. That actually looked really cool. The movie wasn't as great as we were hoping. But that scene was really cool. I did enjoy it. And, seeing all of this stuff that leads up to Donkey Kong, it's just wonderful, and I'm so glad that we get to celebrate here on the site, because it's a really very historical franchise that means a lot, not only to Nintendo itself, but a lot of people that grew up in that era and played it for all hours of the day. But for me, it all started on my dad's Commodore 64. And I put the little floppy disk in, and it heard the started playing it, and it was probably my favorite memory of Donkey Kong Country, or the Donkey Kong franchise. So yeah, that's it.
Hello Arcaders, this is Danny the Ultrasonic Player here, and I am coming to you with a special segment regarding my memories with Donkey Kong. Now, for me, as you may have seen from my article, I never really had a chance to play the original arcade game when it came out, for obvious reasons. But I did manage to have a really cool Donkey Kong experience during the mid-90s, specifically when I went over to New York for the summer. And I got a chance to go to one of those old mom-and-pop video game stores. And they actually happen to have a Donkey Kong Jr. arcade game. And naturally, you know, I, being a Nintendo guy that I am, and even to this day, I went ahead and got some quarters, and I was able to play it. And the game itself, like most Nintendo games, especially during that time, it just grabbed my attention. Now, even though Donkey Kong Jr. is obviously a sequel to the original arcade game, what I really like about it is the fact that it does flip the script on certain things, specifically with Donkey Kong and his son being portrayed in a more sympathetic light, whereas Mario is now seen as the antagonist. But even with that, the very same gameplay, the exact type of just fun factor that made the original Donkey Kong special is still intact in this sequel, with a few added twists to it. For example, because you obviously the main one being that you can actually control Junior this time around instead of Mario. But the gameplay mechanics are a little bit distinct, or rather they have a few tweaks to them, in that you can climb up the vines, but if you grab onto both of them while climbing up, you're able to climb faster. If, on the other hand, if you're grabbing onto one vine with two hands, then you're able to slide down a lot faster. So those little nuances really make it a lot interesting. And especially it helps in many different levels. So, because there's some things you may have to slide down a vine, or sometimes you have to climb up a little bit faster, depending on what's going on in the situation that you have to deal with and what you need to do. But even with that, the gameplay is still intact, like I said before, and there's definitely something in there where everybody, and I do mean everybody, will be able to really enjoy. So, yeah, it's a really incredible experience, and one that still stays with me even to this day. And the beauty of being able to play the arcade game, or rather playing the arcade game on my Switch now, is that I get a chance to relive those memories all over again. But this time, I don't have to worry about not having quarters on hand. Plus, the high score mode and the caravan mode on the Switch version of the arcade game is great too, because at least the high score version, you can pretty much, it's just a matter of competing against yourself to see if you can reach the top number one spot possible. And of course, caravan mode, obviously, you know, with that one, you know, you have 5 minutes and you really have to see, okay, well, what can I do in 5 minutes on this game? Well, quite a bit. So, but in all, Donkey Kong Jr. was definitely, for being, even though it was a sequel, it was probably the best entry, for me anyway, to be able to be introduced into the world of Donkey Kong and to realize that, yeah, it is Donkey Kong that helped introduce the world to Mario and not just our friendly neighborhood gorilla. And I gotta tell you, for a kid who was, you know, of the late 80s and early to mid 90s, that was one heck of an introduction, and one that I'm really glad to have been able to experience. And now here I am again as a somewhat mature adult. I get a chance to be able to experience that all over again, and this time many times over, now with the arcade game being available for download on the Switch. So for all of you out there, if you are a fan of Donkey Kong, you owe it to yourself to have this sequel along with the original in on your library, because this is a game that definitely adds a few tweaks, but it doesn't mess with the basics. And those two things really are what make a good sequel work. So yeah, so those are my little experiences. So to my friends over at the Arcade Archives, Ray and Josh, guys, take it away.
Okay, guys, that was all three of us combining our memories of Donkey Kong, the first one we played, our favorite. I told you mine was going to be longer than theirs, obviously. Now we want to hear from you. What was your favorite version of Donkey Kong? Was it the arcade original? Was it the NES port? Was it any one of the sequels? Let us know in the comments. Please go to our social media, our Facebook, our Twitter, anything and everything. Wherever we are, our YouTube, and if Josh was here, he'd have the list, but he's not, so I should probably get one. But yeah, just go comment on the website. Let us know how we're doing and what your favorite game was. And we're excited to continue, because you probably have noticed at the time of this recording being up on the site that it still says Donkey Kong Month. Well, folks, it is Donkey Kong Month 2, Electric Boogaloo. That's right, we're keeping it going for another month, since Josh and Danny really didn't have a chance to get in there and go over their Kongtastic memories as much as they wanted to. So we're going to keep it going another month. So stay tuned, a lot of stuff planned. I'm going to continue the games that Kong forgot. My favorite, one of my favorites, is coming up, and it's actually the one that really was defined as the very first platform game, and that is Space Panic. And there's quite a bit of history in that one, so I'm really excited to dive in there for you. But go to our social media, let us know how we're doing, give us a like and a subscribe on any one of our social media accounts. And once again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much for everybody listening and keeping with us. And we will talk to you in the next episode of the Electric Circus Podcast. Until then, keep playing like it's 1981, and I'll shout at you later. Thanks, guys. Bye. Hey Arcaders, this is Ray Gunn from the Arcade Archives Network. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast that you're listening to. If you're listening on iTunes, please give it 5 stars. A lot of time and patience go into every podcast we do. 5-star ratings help us so we can continue giving you this quality entertainment every month. And don't forget to share us with your friends. If you're listening to us on YouTube, please give us a like and subscribe to our channel.
And if you're over on our Facebook page, please like and share. Once again, we do this for you guys, and we enjoy doing it every single month. So every little bit helps. So please go online and like us today. Thanks. Keep playing like it's 1981, and I'll talk to you guys later. Bye now.
The Electric Circus is a part of the Arcade Archives Network and is produced by What's This Button Do Productions. Hey guys, what's this button do?
That's what the button does.
The Electric Circus is a part of the Arcade Archives Network.
With assistance from...
Rebellion Productions.